Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Henley, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
I want to talk about these Cubs and what they're doing.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
We get the pleasure of having Mark Grody sitting alongside me for the next few hours. Injuries happen in baseball, my friend. You know that all too well. And a lot of people believe that's the only thing that's going to derail the Cubs from at least another division championship, if not a world championship.
Well, a lot of people are picking the Cubs again this year, and it reminds me a little bit of 2016 where the world picked the Cubs to win it in 2016. From start to finish, the Cubs dominated with everybody picking them. It seems like in any sport, when a team is so singled out to win, it doesn't quite work out that way. But everybody is assuming that the Cubs are over the hangover and they're going to be back on. And honestly, the temperature went up about 50 degrees on the Cubs when they did sign Yu Darvish.
Mully and Henley.
What the hell's going on in this show?
I said the other day, what the hell is going on?
Taking you to work every morning from 5 to 9.
Who are you picking to reach and to win the World Series?
I am going to go with the Chicago Cubs in the World Series against the Boston Red Sox, and I'm going to go with the Cubs winning the World Series.
Wow, that's good.
This has got to be on a shirt at some point.
Right?
What's up, Chicago?
7:04 on the score. You got Mully and Henley. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, opening day for MLB, and the Cubs going to be right.
Okay.
That's right, Barbecue
Go
Bob.
Go Cubs!
11:05 pregame right here on the score. The Cubs and the AAA Marlins, no excuse to drop a game, let alone a series down in Miami, and they won't do that. But you'll hear the first pitch about 11:40 on the score, pregame 11:05. White Sox in Kansas City at 3:05 first pitch. And we had plenty of predictions at the 5 and 5 and entertaining years as well. 312-644-6767 is the number. Text zone very busy. 670-11-67011. If you want to text your contributions to the show, this segment of the show brought to us by O'Reilly Auto Parts. And don't forget, we have Mark Grody sitting in for Mully today. And we're going to qualify two, not one, but two of our listeners for a chance to win great Cubs season tickets. And in the 8 o'clock hour, we not only have great guests like Scott Merkin covering the White Sox and Mike Florio talking lots of NFL, but we're going to give away $1,000 to a listener.
That's so awesome. And you know
tuned.
What? The Cubs for the first six games of the season should not even need their closer. I think that would be a disappointment at this point if the Cubs needed Morrow to get into any of those games. So you should have some early decisive wins. And if the Cubs do lose today 7-2, we'll be sure to blow it out of proportion tomorrow morning.
They'll be carving them up right away tomorrow, 5:01.
Somebody said it on the 5 at 5. The only way that they, I think it was Joe, that the only way that they are carved up is if there is some sort of failure out of the bullpen, because that's sort of the way it works.
Yeah, I think if someone said it was a Dustin, if Morrow collapses, if they end up blowing a lead in the ninth inning, because now you only not only have a loss to a team you should have just walked out and rolled the ball out.
Right.
But now the guy who's everyone said is he can do this, and they signed him and paid him as if he can do this, You don't get a second chance to make a good first impression.
I feel bad for Morrow a little bit, and I'm included. And there's almost this bully mentality with Brandon Morrow, because we're all asked at some point in time, and we use it as a topic, what is your area of concern for the Cubs? And the default for great teams is to say, well, the bullpen could probably use a little bit of strength here, and I'm not real sure about Brandon Morrow as the closer. So, but I do think it's legitimate when he has been on that. In that ninth inning spot 16 times or whatever it is.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. The idea was when you traded for Justin Wilson, it was not just to win the World Series last year and add that missing piece. They probably knew Wade Davis was going to get a richer payday, and he was on the short-term deal with the Cubs. Wasn't Justin Wilson supposed to slide in and be that guy? You weren't supposed to be in the market for a closer in the offseason. And obviously you didn't like the idea of just, well, it was just a hiccup for Justin Wilson. You had to go out there and get a guy you thought could do the job, and whatever you get from Justin Wilson, I guess, now is gravy.
There's no doubt about it, and I also think that they did have serious aspirations of perhaps putting C.J. Edwards in that spot this year as well, but there were just too many times where, you know, obviously when you're a closer, you have to be able to do it day after day after day, and Carl Edwards Jr., who I thought at times may have had some of the best bullpen games for the Cubs last year, but then he had too many times where there was flops and it was just inexplicable too with Carl Edwards Jr. But I think that they thought that he could possibly do it. And it's still not out of the question for next year or maybe even the year past that. But for now, Cubs have had, you know, pretty decent luck in terms of what they have done with their closer situation. It started with Hector Rondon, and that fall, so that precipitous fall for Hector Rondon is a little bit confusing still. Because when he started with the Cubs, even in 2015, he was a terrific closer, and he was even good the World Series year when they brought in Aroldis Chapman. It's just that they had a chance to get Aroldis Chapman.
Sure.
And since about that point, that's when we started to see Hector Rondon go downhill. Wade Davis was probably the MVP of the Cubs last year. So credit to Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer that the guys that they have targeted and presumably, obviously, scouted have worked out very well, so
and
I guess that should give you faith in Brandon
they
Morrow.
Also left enough flexibility should the worst-case scenario reveal itself that they have money and assets to make that deadline deal, go get another closer if they have to. They don't want to. They certainly have enough money invested in Morrow and to you know hope that he does takes the ball and never gives it back. But Carl Edwards is your guy, most important Cub. Mm-hmm. I would ask the listeners who – both sides. Lucas Giolito is your most important Sox.
Not necessarily the obvious ones. Because,
right.
I mean, of course, Rizzo and, right. and Bryant, they're
if they're not doing what they need to do, then this conversation's kind of moot. But 312-644-6767 is a number. Most important White Sox for you, most important Cubs player, not the obvious marquee names. Let's check in with Matt. He's on in River North. Morning, Matt.
Hey, fellas. You know, I knew the Pirates batting coach in 2011 and 2012, and Justin Wilson was on the team. So being an avid Cubs fan, I obviously have concern about him. So I asked him, I go, what's the deal with this guy? He goes, look, he's a one-pitch pitcher, right? And if he can't command his fastball, he's going to have a lot of problems. He goes, now he has a terrific arm. He goes, now if he can command the fastball, he's going to be real effective for you. I go, what type of guy is he? He goes, he's a great kid. He wants to be good, and he wants to win. I go, is he nervous being on the Cubs? Will that affect him? He goes, no, that won't affect him. He goes, he's a competitor. So made me feel a little bit better, but he still has to command his fastball. Now, I'm wondering if Madden makes him nervous. I don't know if, you know, because Madden last year pulled him off a hitter when he threw two balls. That's got to affect the guy's psyche.
I think that was one of those C.J. Edwards moments, too. I think Carl came in and took care of business after that, if I remember correctly. From dealing with Justin Wilson last year, I hated having to go up to him every single time.
Right.
It was like
one pitch was a ball last year. I mean, Matt's right. I mean, if you can't find the strike zone, if you're not getting first pitch strikes, then you're useless in that role. And, you know, I know God bless Chris Bosio and love to have him as part of our show last year and visiting with him each week. But about the third week of, he's still unsettled from the trade and he's only human. That wasn't necessarily going on. That wasn't certainly not the only thing going on. And by the way, Theo thought so too, because he thought the lack of strike throwing from the bullpen was kind of an issue to the point where Chris Bosio was, told his services no longer needed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just you paid a premium for the guy and you give him a couple bad outings, but boy, oh boy, it never got better.
Well, you paid a premium for him. And that's why, if you remember, last year, Justin, I mean, they really gave him tons of chances.
Sure.
Just when you thought there's no way they're going to put him back in high leverage, they did. They then dropped him out of the high leverage for a little while and then put him right back in there because they're thinking what everybody else is thinking. This guy is good.
Right.
Like, he has the track record of being good. You never know, and I got to see this close up, and it's not something I ever had considered before in being part of the media, but being around these guys every day. There is the human nature of getting displaced from your home and living out of boxes and maybe, he's not going to admit it, but maybe he never wanted to be traded out of Detroit. He's going to say the right things, but,
But the story was he packed an extra bag for the Tigers' last road trip knowing that he was going to be traded.
Just in case.
Not that he wanted to be, but it wasn't like a shock, right, when he was told, hey, by the way, we just moved you to the Chicago Cubs. And by the way, there are worse places to go. But, you know, for the first couple of weeks, I bought that a little bit.
Sure.
But when the guy just can't find the strike zone, you know, that there's an issue there. And hopefully the spring training results are that he's much better.
So. Yeah. And, I mean, everything points to him being better just because he's not old. He was very good before he came to the Cubs. He's going to have a whole year of spring training with the Cubs, knows his teammates better. So all that other peripheral stuff that you're talking about, that all leaves the equation 100%. Now it's just about his strike throwing and getting better and being good in big spots. Because you know what? Cubs are going to put him in high leverage again this year, especially early, to see what he can do.
He's Mark Grody sitting in for Mully. You get the Mully and Hanley Show on the Score. Thanks for being with us. And in the next few minutes, we're going to head down to San Antonio and visit with our buddy Ryan Baker from CBS2 covering the Loyola Ramblers. Scores college basketball coverage with Chris Emma there throughout the weekend. And through Monday's championship game is brought to you by Subway. New signature wraps now at Subway restaurants. You got Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
These guys have earned it. You know, I don't, they've invested and worked and done everything we've asked them to do, and you want them to have this moment.
You know that voice? He's the man of the moment. He's the mayor of the city. He's Porter Moser, the head coach of the Chicago Loyola Ramblers, heading down to San Antonio. The team actually got there yesterday, and they face off against Michigan on Saturday evening, 5:09 tip. Against the Wolverines, and we head down to San Antonio with our buddy Ryan Baker, CBS2. You watch him all the time. The little man knows a little something about college hoops. He was on Lou Henson's staff for the Flying Illini 1989 Final Four team and covered the 05 team. Good morning, Ryan.
How are you guys?
Doing well. And first impressions of how the Ramblers are handling the pressure. You were a part of the Flying Illini team. You took every step of the journey all the way to Seattle. And I'm sure you can get a temperature of a team on how they're approaching their big moment.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, just to compare even this Final Four, when you've got two number one seeds and the Michigan team, Loyola, is going to face a three seed, a lot of people predicted to make it this far. Nobody had an 11-seeded Loyola team getting here to San Antonio to the Final Four, but these kids believed, and just their confidence has just blown me away from how they approach every game, whether it was in the first and second round in Dallas to Atlanta or coming here yesterday. The difference is yesterday was the first time – well, actually, let me back up. In Atlanta, they had quite a welcome when they got to the hotel. But to see their images like these, like, giant fatheads plastered all over the hotel where they're staying, and it's like, wow, this is like the real deal. They went from, in Atlanta, the police escort not showing up to get them to practice on time – to having basically the entire San Antonio police force escort them from the airport to the hotel, and they've got this, you know, ridiculous reception. So it'll be interesting to talk to the kids today to see when they step into the Alamo Dome, this huge barn, this big huge building to play, to read their body language and to see their faces, like, you know, how they're handling that kind of excitement and energy. But I don't anticipate they'll change. I mean, these kids are unflappable. They believe they're good. They prepare. They're really smart. And I think they're going to, you know, go into this game with the same mindset they have this entire tournament, that they belong here. They're one of the best teams in college basketball, and they're keeping that edge, and they're going to go out there and prove it.
And Ryan Baker, one of the most amazing parts about this entire run still is that Loyola – was a loss away in the MVC title game against Illinois State from none of us knowing who any of these Loyola players are, and now they're relative stars. How do you think that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, they're getting a little bit more respect in terms of the state police and all that kind of stuff, but how do you think that these players are dealing with that sort of flash stardom that is existing with them? Because I'm sure that people are finally starting to recognize them.
It's very interesting. I think it helps that Loyola and Porter Moser has a veteran group. I think it helps that, again, they're really smart kids. A couple of these guys are transfers, like Marcus Towns and Clayton Custer. You know, they've been around. Andre Jackson's a JUCO kid who you know, he's about 6'4", but plays like he's 6'8", 6'9". It seems like, you know, they got the freshman in Quetwig and even Williamson, who they weren't highly recruited. So I think they have their own, you know, personal chips of things to prove that they belong. And just this is the beauty of this Loyola team is how it's all come together, and they're a true team. Think about it. You've had it, and they keep talking about it. A different guy could be the hero every night, and that's what it's been. Whether it's, you know, Dante Ingram and the buzzer beater against Miami in the first game, the Clayton Custer getting the bounce, the Marcus Towns, the Ben Richardson. I mean, they truly don't care, and they're in it together. And that's so rare to see, not only in college basketball, but in all the sports, when it's more about the we than about the me. And that's just kind of how they've approached this thing. That, you know, it sounds kind of, you know, sappy, you know, all for one, one for all. But that's how they're doing it. I mean, these kids are tied in together. And this game against Michigan is going to be very interesting. Loyola's gotten a lot of favorable draws on that left side of the bracket to get here to San Antonio. And they're a team that matches up very well. I think that Loyola, from a skill level, is right there with Michigan, but the Wolverines' athletes may be a little bit better. But we've said that about Miami and Tennessee, the teams they've played. What's interesting, out of the four tournament games, they've held three of their opponents to exactly 62 points, which is their season average defensively. So, I mean, you can't execute a game plan better than that. And the other team was 69-68, so they hadn't allowed a team to score 70 points in the tournament, which is mind-boggling.
And this is certainly uncharted territory for Porter, because as he told us yesterday, he'd been to 27 consecutive Final Fours as a coach, because it's kind of a coach's convention. But
he
was dialing up friends in the business, guys who have taken teams there before, and asked, you know, hey, what pitfalls should I be wary of? How do you, you know, make sure you get the team prepped the right way when you get on site in particular? And you know, I've always will have a special place in my heart, Ryan, for Lou Henson, because that was my first beat covering that the Illini and the Flying Illini in particular. And you know, he was he knew how to prep that team, but they did have Nick Anderson, they had Kendall, they had Steve Bardo, they had little PJ Bowman. And I know that, you know, Lou said now we have to bench Kenny Battle when he does the 180, because we know he can do that, but PJ will want to do it too, and you just can't have that. You can't roll the ball out and let the fellas recreate. So you got to stick to your coaching style, and you got to be the same guy in San Antonio that you were in December playing in the MVC, right?
Well, I will say this. My first experience going to a Final Four was 1989, when I was one of the student managers for that team, very fortunate to be in that position. It was out in Seattle. And I will never forget the guy. Our team hotel was probably an hour from Seattle. Lou, it was a different era, different time. His philosophy was, you know, no distractions. But at the same time, these are college kids. You want to enjoy the experience. I mean, we stayed. Mount Rainier, who knows? We were somewhere. I mean, we were so far away. It was this Red Lion Inn. And the bus took forever to get there, so we didn't get to experience everything around the Final Four. But one thing that struck me the first time we go in the old King Dome is you look around, oh, there's Magic Johnson, oh, there's Bill Russell, there's Oscar Rodman, you know, and this is, you know, 30 years ago almost, and you see everybody who's anybody in college basketball, in the world of basketball, like, this is amazing. I fell in love with the Final Four from that moment on, and I've probably been to, you know, a half dozen Final Fours since then, 15. And, you know, looking at the way it happens now, Loyola stand right on the Riverwalk, which is right here in the mix of everything. And although Porter said, listen, I want these kids to soak up this moment, the spotlight they've earned, but I don't want them sampling the San Antonio nightlife a little much. We're going to have a curfew. He wouldn't tell us exactly what that curfew is. He said, don't worry. You know, they've got a room set up inside the hotel with, you know, I guess video games and a record, you know, all kind of different activities where they could just kind of like a players only room to hang out. And their families are here, but they want them to lock in. And I think what's great about this Loyola team, they self-police. I don't think Porter has to beat the drum and say, okay, guys, let's get it together. These guys want it. They truly can see it and taste it now. And with every round and every, you know, victory, every buzzer beater, every moment, their confidence just continues to explode. And we saw it in that Kansas State game, even close. I mean, they blew that team off the court pretty much in the tip. So you're talking about they've beaten teams from the ACC, SEC, and the Big 12. So I don't think they're spooked because they're facing a Big Ten team on Saturday.
Well, and I think that, Ryan, to that end, you talked about Kansas State and the spanking they put on Bruce Weber's team. I think in each and every one of these games that Loyola and Porter Moser has made the opponent look stupid. Because I say that because I think that all these teams understandably underestimated Loyola. They kept thinking this is fluky kind of stuff. Every team that they've played has had the better athletes on them. And it seems like even Kansas State didn't learn from watching the previous games against Loyola. And I don't see why Michigan wouldn't. Now, they're saying all the right things, but they're probably looking past Loyola a little bit, too. And hasn't that been a big part of the success?
I don't think that at all, because John Beilein is one of, if the not best coach, in my opinion, in college basketball right now. So one thing Michigan is going to be, what you're going to see Saturday are two very well-prepared teams. Believe me, Michigan is not going to be in a situation looking past Loyola or anybody at this point. They've won 32 games. Loyola's won 32 games. You don't get to this point and have that kind of slippage. It's not going to happen. Listen, these kids, when we were coming up, you know, I wish it was the old days. We'd have more job security if there was no cable, because everybody would watch, you know, the local news. By the time these kids get to the locker room, they've seen the highlights of everybody. They're looking on their phones. They know what's going on. They know who Loyola is. They know who these players are. They're not looking past them, and the numbers don't lie. You match up Loyola's numbers and Michigan's numbers, they're almost identical.
Right.
You know, that's what I don't think that's going to be. I don't think Michigan's looking past Loyola at all.
Well, we'll let you go, Ryan, but one of our texters said, Ryan, it's the Red Lion Inn on I-5 in Tacoma, in case you ever want a vacation back there.
Listen, if that place hasn't been condemned, I don't want to come back.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for getting up.
After we lost to Michigan, I would say this. From that 89, I'm really rooting for Loyola, if I can be unprofessional, because, as you know, that Michigan loss in 89 still sticks in my craw.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
go Ramblers.
It stuck in my craw as a blue deadline. I mean, it went way too long.
Oh, sure.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for getting up. We'll talk to you. And, of course, we'll be watching on CBS2. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Ryan Baker, one of our buds here in town, and the Scores College basketball coverage through that championship game Monday, brought to us by Subway. New signature wraps now at Subway restaurants. And Chris M. of the Scores' very own is going to be out there bringing us all the coverage throughout the weekend and the championship game. Right now, let's check in with Joe O.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you, Joe. Going to talk some baseball, Gordon Whitmire, but we do have the Ramblers in the semifinal game Saturday, 5:09 tip, against those Michigan Wolverines coached by John Beilein.
And no matter what John Beilein has said, all the other coaches said the same thing. I do think that it's human nature when you feel like, and the Michigan players probably are better athletes, and maybe even more skilled, they are going to look past Loyola to some degree. Maybe not in their heads right now. They're not thinking, oh, this is going to be easy. We're going right to the finals. But I think when they're on the court, we've seen this happen with every single team that Loyola has played, that they tried to out-athlete them. They didn't adjust their coaches. They made teams, Loyola did, made teams look stupid. And I think Michigan's going to be thinking the same thing, as much as they're talking about not doing
well,
that.
Well, that's why Beilein said, by the way, Loyola's a very, very, very good team. That's three varies. He was pounding that message
well,
in.
Well, Bruce, every chance Bruce Weber got to get on
sure.
the radio, he said the same thing
sure.
about Loyola.
That's what the coaches fear the most.
Right. So why is it going to be any different
but
with Michigan?
Loyola 22-1 since January 31st, a buzzer beater at Bradley. They had a chance on a three-point shot that missed at the end, and that tells you they're a very, very, very good team. You got Mullane Haley on the score?
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Cubs win. Gordon Whitmire taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse.
Cubs
win.
Chicago Cubs. Yeah.
The Chicago Sun-Times, Gordon Whitmire.
And Gordon Whitmire, the Cubs insider here on the Mullane and Haley Show. You read him in the Chicago Sun-Times, suntimes.com. He is down in Miami opening day throughout baseball. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Doing very well, and by all accounts, yours included, this was not only a smooth sailing spring training for the Chicago Cubs, the smoothest that Theo's ever experienced, and that says something. Is this team really as push-button turnkey as it seems to be?
Well, it was when the games didn't count, and so we'll find out. And what, we got 11 days, 10 games in 11 days before they get home? At this pace, I figure they clinch on Sunday.
They best, or it'll be a disappointment. Gordo, looking at the Cubs lineup, it is in. Ian Happ leading off, followed by Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Wilson Contreras, Kyle Schwarber, the left fielder, Addison Russell, Jason Hayward, Javi Baez, and of course John Lester, the pitcher. Any surprises in that? And how long do you think it'll look like that?
No, the thing to watch is Happ up at the top. And, we saw what happened. They committed to a guy last year, and they stayed committed to him a week, 2 weeks, 5 weeks into a really terrible slump until they finally got him out of there. They're not saying the same things they said about Schwarber a year ago. This isn't a commitment as Happ as their one leadoff guy. So in that regard, it takes probably a little bit of pressure off him. But God, the guy really has taken to that role. He, from the very beginning of spring training, when he knew he was going to get a chance to hit up there, he embraced it. He studied it. He has talked to people that know Dexter Fowler about his approach and things like that. So he'll get a shot to carry it all the way through. I mean, if he starts producing, continues to produce, they'll just ride him. I mean, he'll, for matchups, a certain lefty here and there, you'll see Almora cycle in, but it'll be really interesting to watch how Happ handles that role during the regular season as we go forward.
Really enjoyed your interview with Kyle Schwarber and the piece you wrote about, I don't know if he was pretending, but when you asked him about the weight, he didn't even acknowledge how much weight he lost. Love the quote though, "I don't want to be the National League DH." So he's aware of what everyone's kind of saying, that's who he is, and he's in the wrong league. And I don't know how it plays out over the course of 162. How are they going to handle him? Will they protect him like they did throughout the balance of the season after Des Moines? Or, and I know Joe's talked about more hands, less arms, and, how does that how does that end up in numbers when you look at it at the end of the season?
Well, the organizational opinion seems to be that, this, what we saw of this guy when he broke in 15 and when he did that heroic stuff in the World Series in 16, that's who he is. And when he was raking in the minors and earning his way into the big leagues, that's the hitter that he is, and that what he went through last year, and we saw the second half was a lot better than the, it was, you would have taken that over a full season. So going into this year, they look at that as that learning experience as possibly being something that he sort of gets to the other side of, and it's just part of his development as a hitter. They don't anticipate needing to protect him. Now, Joe is going to be rotating guys in and out all the time. I mean, it's just as important to him that guys don't sit on the bench for long periods of time and that guys are ready to play multiple positions and match up when he needs them, as it is to supposedly protect a guy or prevent him from a bad matchup. But if Schwarber can handle the defensive role well, I mean, if he can become an average left fielder,
mm-hmm.
and he hits, I mean, he could win himself what amounts to an everyday job out there. And if Happ does what he's supposed to do in center, I mean, he's going to get a chance to win himself very close to an everyday job out there. And then you have to start wondering what happens in right field. And Hayward, after 2 years here and lukewarm results 1 year and terrible results the other year at the plate, now he might be, he's got to show something, because there's guys ready to play out there instead of him. And it won't take long before that starts happening.
Maybe that's where you get the platoon with Albert Almora Jr. I mean, we're all looking center field, and I don't know how.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you would see it devolve into just a right field platoon. there would still be the other positions involved, but to a lesser degree potentially, and that's kind of what to look for. I think as these young guys get more mature, if they do what they seem capable of doing as they continue to mature, you could see a very distinct evolution take place in, you know, I was going to say a matter of a year or two, maybe a matter of months. So that really, it's a nice subplot. It's a very interesting subplot to watch this season, in addition to all the other expectations and team goals.
He's Gordon Whitmeyer, our Cubs insider here on the Mully and Hanley Show, covering the Cubs for the Sun-Times. And Gordon, Mike Borzello is over the moon when it comes to Yu Darvish. Should everybody be, and maybe you can explain to our listeners why Mike Borzello and the Cubs system that they've utilized, why he's off the charts when it comes to that, you know, and Mike saying that the last guy, maybe the only guy over the last few years that he can compare him to is Jake Arrieta when it comes to stuff.
Yeah, when it comes to baseball, the baseball part of his life, Borzello is a scouting video planning nerd. I mean, this guy is as thorough as it gets. He's very passionate about attack plans for pitchers. And you know, he started doing a little bit of it with the Yankees way back when. And Dale Swaim, that's where Dale Swaim knew of him and was one of the first guys that Dale asked to join the staff when he got that job a few years back. And he's been a huge key to some of the pitching success they've had. And that's because you take a guy that's got X number of pitches and X amount of skill, and then you apply that to the planning that Borzello puts together, irrespective of that. So he'll take a hitter, break him down, how he matches up against left, right, what parts of zones he can hit, what pitches he can hit, what pitches he can't, and how he responds to certain counts and in game situations, et cetera, et cetera. You should see these sheets, these grids that he puts together on every hitter. Then you take the pitcher and you say, well, what can he do? Well, this guy might have he might be a fastball slider guy whose changeup is not really reliable. So you're limited with your weapons that you can apply to that chart. With Yu Darvish, he throws everything. He can command, when he's on, he can command everything, and they're plus pitches. Mid 90s, we saw upper 90s, fastball, variations on the fastball, movement on curveballs and sliders, and he can throw a changeup. So whatever Borzello has for a hitter, he can pluck something from Darvish's arsenal and say, in this situation, you throw this pitch, this guy can't hit it. That's why he loves him. Kyle Hendricks doesn't have a slider, so he can't apply sliders to anybody when Kyle Hendricks is on the mound in their game planning. But he can apply everything to Yu Darvish, similar to Jake Arrieta's stuff when he was here.
Let's talk about John.
So that's why.
I would say Borzello, too. He's a man with purpose. He walks fast. He's always got papers in his hand. He's always got something to do.
Think about it. He's the last guy standing from the Dale Swaim regime, right?
I'm sorry?
He's the last guy standing from Dale's staff, right? So, I mean, he's been through...
I mean, other than, Lester Schroed is an organizational guy. But, yeah, the guys that...
Tim Boss.
Dale brought in.
Yeah.
I mean, Boss was the other...
Yeah.
The last guy before.
Right. He was a Swaim guy, too. All right, let's talk about John Lester. Today goes against the Miami Marlins, 34 years old. Let's face it, John Lester had some duds last year, and relative to what he had done in the past, not as good. How important is it for him to get going? Or actually, I should ask the question is, do you think he has lost something? Are we starting to see the decrease of John Lester, or was last year just kind of a fluky year for him?
Well, last year, you remember he had that lat injury that finally put him on the DL for a couple of weeks late in the season. He had been dealing with some of that for several starts leading up to that without saying anything. He finally said something. So that may have been a contributing factor to some of those results. That said, he's always had, since he's been a Cub anyway, one or two of those games where, you know, he doesn't get out of the second inning just because he just doesn't have it that day. So there's always that too, but I mean, he had one or two of those even in the year he almost won the Cy Young. Has he lost something? I mean, he's 34 years old.
Yeah.
He doesn't throw as hard as he used to, of course, but he also he also has made adjustments to that. He typically, as you well know, you know, pitches low in the zone. He doesn't get hurt by a lot of long contact, and so if he continues, and you know, he's got a chance to just continue to be successful that way, and being left-handed helps, you know, statistically speaking, you know, guys don't see as many of those, and so that always tends to help longevity and effectiveness. So I think, yeah, I mean, there's nobody in that clubhouse that takes his craft, you know, sort of more soberly, seriously than he does. So if anybody's got a chance to age well, it's probably him.
You mentioned Schwarber's defense. Happ, obviously, he also got in better shape, when Theo and Jed asked him to do so. We've seen the bats. Certainly, he talked about how hard he's worked on his defense and center. Is that going to – are we going to notice that? Is he going to be an above-average defensive player?
We saw some flashes in the spring. I mean, some really good reads on balls. He's definitely aggressive. You know, he made a few diving catches. So day after day after day, when the games count, when he's playing the full nine innings, you know, obviously that's going to be the test. The footwork is better. He does look much more comfortable out there, and he's played, I think, exclusively the outfield, I think, in spring training, almost exclusively center field. So this is what they have in mind. They like what they've seen so far, and he is a different animal out there. Now, that's also going to play into how much playing time he gets out there. If he continues to grow as a center fielder like he has, then that plays into that whole everyday potential. So that also is worth watching. But so far, he really does look good out there, which is surprising to me and actually surprising to a couple of the scouts I talked to.
Yeah, I mean, and he's actually pretty good at second base, too. And I don't think anybody in the organization thought that he was going to be anything defensively, especially on the infield, where I know he's not going to see a lot of time.
Right, and Joe says that out loud. I mean, he says, you know, when I first came in, I didn't think much of him as a second baseman. Hadn't heard very many good things, and he said he sold me at the end of that first spring, or the first spring that he saw him.
Gordon,
but he's not gonna get much time out there, though.
Zobrist doesn't sound like he wants to play much first base, so you got to find a spot for him on occasion. So
he's actually taken to it a little bit.
Yeah,
you'll see him out there.
But he's been talking about how difficult it is, right? I mean, he's like, you know, everyone thinks
Pandering.
It's easy. Yeah,
first base is easy.
But just in the last week or so, he's really put in a lot of work at it, he's definitely capable there, and he seems willing. He's willing to do whatever they want.
He's the mind of Zoe. We'll let you go, Gordon. Thanks for getting up this morning. Keep up the great work. You're in midseason form as always. All star stuff coming out. We'll be reading tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, man. Take it easy.
He's Gordon Whitmire, Chicago Sun-Times, suntimes.com, and thankfully a part of the Mully and Hanley Show on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Go get him, Zoe.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.